The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So lately I've been really appreciating the value of being able to watch the mind in daily life practice. And I just wanted to say a few words about that. Okay. I'll wait a moment. Okay, so I have been reflecting on what it means to watch the mind. I think I've said, at least to myself, if not to a group, that I really appreciated Sayadaw Utejaniya's teaching to help me learn to watch the mind. And in thinking about that, I'm like, well, what did I mean by that? You know, what do I mean when I say watching the mind there? Because before I met Sayadaw Utejaniya, I certainly knew how to watch thoughts and emotions, both of which are mental experiences. I kind of began to recognize what mindfulness was as a mind state. And so what did I actually mean by watching the mind? And there's two pieces to it, I think, two pieces to what I feel like Sayadaw Utejaniya taught me. And I think it's in the realm of these two pieces that I'm really appreciating their value in daily life practice. So in daily life practice, I don't necessarily just simply mean the ability to watch thoughts or emotions in daily life, but this kind of broader sense. So the two pieces of watching the mind that I've begun to articulate is, first of all, a capacity and sense of what the broad state of the mind is. This is really in the realm of the third foundation of mindfulness, the sense of the mind being in an expansive state, a constricted state, a pushing away state. So just the kind of the broader sense of that, not the the rapid arising of an emotion like anger or frustration. But more of a state in which we may be hanging for a while and may often be kind of below the level of our conscious awareness. And so highlighting, you know, Sayadaw Utejaniya helped me to highlight these attitudes of mind. And so he talks a lot about the attitude of mind. And initially, as I first explored that, it was in the realm of emotions. It's like, what emotion am I bringing to this experience? So there's something, you know, pleasant happening. I like it. I want more of it. But there can be kind of a broader state. It's hard to articulate, but the more I began exploring the attitude of mind, the more I began to be able to recognize these very non-specific, imprecise states of mind. And that's a kind of a feature of this kind of state of mind that I'm talking about. It's not something you can point at and say, oh, that's what it is. In fact, often I find the feeling of paying attention to these mind states means a kind of stepping back or a broadening of the mind, a sense of almost like a maybe a veil or kind of a broader sense of how the mind is. That might be not so much veil-like, but very clear, such as the state of equanimity or a tranquility. But often it does come with these flavors of a mind that's just kind of not landing, it's kind of an agitated mind, or a mind that's like squeezing and not wanting to be with something. So that piece of noticing the state of the mind, I feel that the tool that Sayadaw offered was around the attitude. What's the attitude? What's the relationship to our experience? And this being something we can do anytime, any time of day, any time we're doing anything, we can, if we remember the key, if we remember, we can check in, oh, what's my relationship to this? What's my relationship to this? And initially, it may have more of the flavor of an emotion or something more specific, like, oh, you know, I don't like this, or I'm angry about this, or frustrated about this. But over time, my exploration of the attitude began opening to this broader sense of a state of mind, rather than something kind of more precisely constructed or even known. Often these states of mind are much more imprecise or almost vague. It's like you're looking at fog or looking at mist. You can't really point to what the mist is. It's being in the mist, the kind of the diffuseness of that that gives you the feeling of that mist. So the states of mind can be like that, and checking into the attitude is a way to begin to touch into that. So that's one piece, and one piece that I really want to encourage you to explore in daily life. I mean, we can go in our daily lives and be, you know, kind of working with mindfulness to know what we are paying attention to, and almost be oriented at times towards particularly our physical experience. Certainly that's a great place to begin to establish mindfulness, is within the physical sense experience. We can learn what it means to be mindful, what it means to be present. And yet, as we connect to sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, stuff coming and going in our minds, there can be this attitude or relationship that's often not really known or seen. And so checking in, just noticing, and often that question, what's my attitude, what's my relationship? Really, really helpful question. So I just encourage that in your daily lives. The other piece that I've begun to sense that Sayadaw Tejaniya taught me was the capacity to watch or know how the mind is functioning. So the way the mind is working. This one's, I've not tried to articulate this too much yet, so this is partly why I wanted to record it, see what comes up. So the functioning of the mind, the teaching that Sayadaw pointed to that I began to explore in this area was the teaching around the five aggregates being activities of mind. So often when we talk about the five aggregates, these five areas of our being that kind of make up our human experience, body experience, and then the other four are mental experience, feeling, whether something's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, perception, how we recognize things, what we recognize. Mental formations, often understood to be much of what goes on in our mind, the thoughts, the emotions, the mind states. And then consciousness, the knowing capacity. So we can look at these five areas of experience through the Sayadaw talks about these five aggregates as being both processes and the results of the processes. So, you know, you can look at, for instance, with feeling, We can notice whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and that would be more the normal way that we think about that experience. It's like, oh, hearing the sound of the train, that's kind of neutral, or feeling the pressure of my sits bones, slightly unpleasant. You know, so just knowing that quality is more knowing the result. So, and then there's like, you know, so we can also recognize with perception, we can recognize that we have perceived carpet or wall or something that we've recognized something, or we can recognize that we have the experience of anger or frustration. All of it is, this is the usual way that we typically explore working with these aggregates. We get familiar with the experiences that are happening in our mind and body system through these five lenses, perhaps, of body, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. Sayadaw was talking about these more from the process point of view. And there's a sutta that refers to them as process. So there's one sutta where somebody's asking the Buddha about the five aggregates, and the person says, well, why is it called feeling? And the person and the Buddha says, well, it feels. That's why it's called feeling. Well, why is it called perception? Well, it perceives. That's why it's called perception. So he's pointing to it as the verb, the perceiving function of the mind, the feeling function of the mind, the forming function of the mind, the knowing function of the mind. And let's leave aside body for the moment. There's also a way that's described as body as experience, or rather than as a thing, it's more, it's described as what is impinged on the body. And so Sayadaw pointed to that and said, see, you know, just explore the functioning of the mind. And that was a little bit mysterious to me at first. But through various explorations, particularly around some of the aggregates, I explored perception quite a bit. I began to have a sense of the mind as an activity, the mind doing its things. And the one piece that I can highlight and talk about as being really useful in daily life around this area has to do with mental formations, and it's in the area of attention. Attention being one of the aspects of mental formation, both mentally forming, so mental formations kind of tumble us forward in our lives, and attention is both formed by by our conditions. Attention is formed by our conditions. You know, it's like I pay attention to what I pay attention to because of the history I have. So that's pretty easy to see. You know, I tend to pay attention to precise things because that's the training that my mind has had from the time I was very young. The attention is formed by our history, but it also, attention then, because we pay attention to something, it leads us onward. We've paid attention to something, and therefore it shapes the next things that happen to us. What we've paid attention to shapes our lives. And so beginning to be curious about attention. Often in mindfulness practice, we look at attention, or we think about attention as, you know, we pick something to pay attention to in order to be mindful. We explore attention from that perspective. We like say, okay, I'm going to pay attention to the breath. That's a way we can use attention, consciously directing the attention, picking something to pay attention to. Another way that we can cultivate mindfulness, and this is one of the areas sometimes I think people are a little potentially confused about what mindfulness is. At least certainly I felt like if I was not picking what I was paying attention to, then I wasn't mindful. And that's a misunderstanding. It's possible to kind of settle back and watch the mind pick what it pays attention to. So rather than being in control of what the mind pays attention to, just settling back and relaxing and then noticing while we're sitting here, for instance, that the attention kind of gravitates to something. What's most obvious? Right now, for me, the sensation of my sitz bones is pretty obvious. The sound now is obvious. A dryness of my mouth now is obvious. It's not that I'm deciding, oh, I'm going to pay attention to these things. There's a way in which the attention is being drawn to those things based on conditioning, based on the past, right? Based on what I have oriented my mind to a lot in the past. And so this exploration, so we can be mindful, mindfulness can be present, whether or not we're picking what to pay attention to. And so this begins to both helps us to clarify the difference between two factors of mind, mindfulness and attention, but also gives us a very interesting window into how our mind works, as we can just be curious and start to look at this function of attention. Probably the easiest place to begin this kind of exploration, at least I see this, it's perhaps not so easy. I mean, well, you can in sitting meditation just sit and be curious. You know, what's the next thing the attention is drawn to? What's the next thing the attention is drawn to? And yet that exploration tends to be the exploration right on the edge of our wandering mind, because where our attention is drawn to tends to be where we lose our mindfulness. And so it's really an interesting exploration. It kind of keeps us perhaps like right at that edge of the wandering mind. But it also, we can get lost. It's easy to get lost with that exploration, you know, because it's like, this is actually how our mind wanders, you know, and we can look at this. So here's another way to explore this. We pick something to pay attention to, so direct the attention to the breath. And then we notice when the mind gets pulled to something else. So, you know, and this is how wandering mind often works. It's like we're sitting here paying attention to the breath, and a sound happens. Our attention is pulled to the sound, but because we have the idea we're paying attention to the breath, it's almost that we don't notice that the attention has gotten pulled to the sound, and our mindfulness goes out right there. So, you know, this is a very common way for wandering mind to happen. We're paying attention to the breath. Some other obvious experience pulls the attention. And because we have the agenda or the idea that, oh, I'm paying attention to my breath. Oh, in, out, how nice. Oh, in, oh, hearing. Out the sound door. So the this exploration around the attention, I find it incredibly useful. And in fact, this becomes much of my open awareness practice when I'm not directing my attention, is to see, it's kind of like following the attention. Follow what's the next thing that the mindfulness is pulled to. This begins to give you a really interesting window into why your mind does what it does, as well as what it's doing. So we can do this in our sitting, and yet because it is like right on the edge of the wandering mind, we often can get lost in that exploration until we've really, you know, played with it for a while. And so if you do play with this, give yourself a lot of space for wandering mind to happen, because it's going to. So I just encourage, you know, the practice of it. You know, if we think we're going to get enlightened by choosing what we pay attention to, we'll never get enlightened, because freedom, nibbana, is something we cannot conceive. And so we have to be willing to be present for the mind, knowing something that we can't choose what it is. So this skill of learning how to follow the attention like this gives us some training in this possibility. So I was going to say there's some easier ways to explore this, and this is, you know, in daily life, you know, when you're, maybe it's some simple times when you're not doing too much else, but, you know, taking a walk or walking between the car and the grocery store, just some simple times. And again, remembering this is the trick. And I've talked about this in the daily life practice retreats, but I'm highlighting it here as a place to explore this factor of attention. Notice, and you can let yourself be aware of the sense door of seeing. And that's a little bit restricting the attention to a particular area of experience. But then within that, just notice when the attention moves from seeing, just kind of like receptive, settled back. You know, you're just walking across the parking lot, no particular thing that the attention is landing on. And when it shifts to looking, we look at something. We see something move and, whew, our attention goes right there. Or we, a connection of the ear door, we hear something and, whew, our attention, we look. So that exploration, the distinction between seeing and looking, it's not that we're only trying to see and never to look, but to notice when that happens, that's attention. The looking is the mind choosing something to pay attention to. So we can explore this factor of what is it that draws our attention? What is it that draws the eye to look at something? You can also do this with hearing. The door of hearing, when we're just kind of, you know, maybe this happens in meditation, we can explore this, or, you know, in driving if you don't have the radio on. It's like, you know, it's just like hearing is kind of, you're just in, it's in the listening, it's just kind of in the background. It's not, there's nothing particularly drawing the attention. You're just hearing. And then suddenly there's a car horn and boom, you're hearing. The attention is right there on the hearing. So just noticing that distinction, and in daily life, you know, a good place to begin to explore this quality of how the mind goes from kind of a receptive place of just being in seeing or hearing to the active place of looking or listening. And the interesting thing about that, too, is that you will often find, even though the looking is active, and often we see, we jump on that, and it's like, oh yes, I am looking at that. When you start to watch this process, you see that looking is conditioned. You didn't actually decide to look. Some process in your mind chose that. And so, it, in a very interesting way, it begins to undermine this idea of me and I doing everything. So that's enough. Those were some of my thoughts on that. Thank you. That was a lot more than I expected.